The Enemies Within by Michael Z. Lewin, with Ed Bishop as Albert Sampson. The Enemies Within.
I should have known better, of course. But the month before Christmas is a depressing time for private detectives. Most people have to pretend to be cheerful in December, and they try not to think about the things they hire detectives for. So they don't hire detectives. Not even lovable, good-natured me. Now, people not hiring me affects my judgment. Makes me too eager to work for anybody who does make the long climb up my wooden hill. There's this man, Mr. Sampson. He's been bothering me, making a terrible nuisance. Now, you'd think by my age I'd know that I'm not particularly good at intimidating people. But we all have to live. Let's go, number 17. Your time is up.
Come on in, Sugar. It's open.
Oh, yes?
It's open, Sugar. You're early, but I'm ready.
Not for me, you're not. Hey, kind of early to go to bed, huh?
Hey, who the hell are you?
Not Sugar. I'm not sweet enough. Mr. Bartholomew, I presume?
Just what do you want, Buster?
Albert Sampson is a name. I'm not a buster, but don't get me angry. I just want to convey a little message. Now, the quicker you understand it, the quicker I'll be on my way out of this cruddy motel so that you can get on with, well, whatever you're planning to get on with.
Message?
Stop messing with Martin Wilson's life. Stop coming to his place of business. Stop getting in the way of his calm and quiet routine. That's the message.
So that's it.
Yeah.
And what are you supposed to be, a little local muscle, huh?
Not exactly the reaction I've been looking for. Wilson, my client, told me to act tough. But even when I'm hungry, I guess I'm not that convincing.
Laugh again, wise guy.
You don't scare me, son. Your little poof friend Wilson wants me to go away, huh? Okay, he knows what I want. He gives me what I want, and then poof, I go away. Hey, poof, huh?
Well, exactly what do you think you want, friend?
Hey, what connection are you to Wilson?
Now, he hired me this afternoon to pass a message tonight.
So what are you?
Private detective.
Yeah? Well, ain't that something?
It is.
Look, Sampson, I'm a private detective, too, only I'm out of Chicago. Well, I got a client there wants me to find his wife. Now, your Wilson knew her a few years back before he found out his proclivities, I guess. I don't have any leads on her, but I managed to track him here to Indianapolis. So I go to him and I say, real polite, Mr. Wilson, do you know where Melanie Bear is? Now, if all he'd done was giggle and say, Melanie who, then I'd have gone away. But he didn't. He blew a stack. He had me tossed out of his antique store and he told me to get lost. So what did I do?
Went back to Chicago.
You wish. I waited outside and I followed him home. He still wouldn't talk to me, but while I'm there, I do notice a cute little man lurking in the background, which gives me a bit of a handle on our friend Wilson.
What?
Now, you know as well as I do that by ranting and raving and sending you here, he's as good as told me that he knows where my client's wife is. Well, that's all I want to know. And considering his present arrangements, I wouldn't think it would bother him all that much to tell me where she is. Then I'll go away.
Yeah, but...
Just like you're going to. Right now.
Well, there wasn't a lot else I could do, considering he was expecting a visitor. And besides, I'd done what I'd been hired to do. I'd gone. I'd conveyed. If the message hadn't had the desired effect, it was because Wilson hadn't told me the whole story. He's been intruding on my premises. That's all you need to know. But he might just listen if it comes from somebody else, especially if you're, you know, forceful. Now, if it didn't work, it didn't work. That was Wilson's problem now. My problem was how to drum up a better class of client. Well, to raise my spirits to their peak for the day, I went home and went to bed. What's happening, huh?
I know you're in there. Get out here.
Oh, no.
Come on, Sampson. Come out your office.
I live in an apartment attached to my business office by a door. One day, I hope to have to commute.
What the hell time is it, anyway? Listen, don't you know better than to disturb a private detective before noon on a Sunday?
You didn't do any good. He came out to my house again this morning. You didn't do any good.
I did what you told me to. I didn't promise it would be effective.
In fact, I think it was a lousy idea, trying to scare a guy like that. Not that you asked.
I didn't know what else to do.
You could have asked my advice.
Well.
Saved me a trip, saved you $10.
I didn't,
You picked me because I look seedy and sleazy. And that's not the kind of person you ask advice from, huh? Fair enough. Only it hasn't done you much good.
No.
Look, not that it's my business, but what do you know about this Melanie Bear?
Oh, what do you know about Melanie Bear? Who told you about her?
Look, at least you're entitled to a report. My notes are as follows. Last night at 8:25, I entered Bartholomew's motel room and told him in a firm and forceful way that he should cease to be acquainted with you. He was not receptive to the idea. He told me that he was looking for a Melanie Bear, who you knew when you lived in Kokomo, whenever that was. Now, he has reason to believe that you know her whereabouts, and he intends to keep after you until you tell him what he wants to know. That's the end of my report. And that's the end of my job. Unless and until you tell me more about what the hell is going on. If you want my help, you've struck it lucky, because I just happen to be between cases, and I'm available to help if you need it.
Oh, we need help. We certainly need help.
Yeah, but the question is, do you need my help?
Can you come out to my house tonight? About 8?
I can.
See, another party is involved, but I think it... I'm pretty sure that it will be all right.
Okay, if you don't call me before 7 and tell me it's off, I'll come out to your house at 8.
You'll come alone.
With my conscience. Your other party will be there?
Oh, yes. There's no point otherwise.
And there it was. Rags to riches. Employment. It was early December. If the job lasted, I might be able to buy myself a Christmas present. Wilson lived just the Indianapolis side of Monrovia, well beyond the usual commuter belt and to the southwest, an unfashionable direction. It was a big frame farmhouse.
Mr. Sampson?
You were expecting someone else?
No, of course not.
But he looked out into the winter night behind me, and he double-locked the door after I came in. Then he led me to a long pine-paneled living room. I didn't see Wilson's friend at first. But then at the far end, next to a commode which had been converted into a liquor cabinet, I saw a thin figure in suit and tie, sitting rigidly, holding a glass. Wilson led me towards his friend. The friend drank deeply from its glass, twice. Now, I'm not blind. While we approached, I realized that the figure, despite its clothes, was definitely feminine. Female feminine.
Get your friend a drink, Mars.
This is Mr. Sampson, and this is Melanie.
And there she was, the woman Bartholomew was looking for. How do you do, Miss Bear?
I'm Mrs. Key, which is the problem. And while you're about it, Mars, top me up.
Something for you, Mr. Sampson?
He got me a beer, gin for Mrs. Key. She was dressed like a man, and I could see that with the jacket buttoned and her hair slicked back, she could pass from a distance. But the question was, why should she want to?
This business must be quite a strain for you, Mrs. Key.
What do you mean? What business?
Oh, I mean having Bartholomew stir things up, and now having to have me around.
This is a departure for us. We've never confided in anybody before.
Never.
Well, you have some sort of problem, and Mr. Wilson here seems to think that I may be able to help you with it. If it's any reassurance for you, I am restrained by law from telling anything I find out while I'm in your employ to anybody but you. Or the police, if it involves a crime.
Any crime is not our doing.
Now, Bartholomew told me that he was employed by Melanie Bayer's husband. That would be...
Edmund Key, my maniac husband.
See, Melanie is an old friend from Kokomo. We both grew up there. We went our separate ways. Then 6 years ago, quite by chance, we met again in Chicago.
Rekindled old friendships.
Decided that all things considered, we would be happier together than we had been apart.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes. Well, we'd been separated for 3 years before we re-met, and in the meantime, Melanie had got herself married.
May I ask why you didn't stay together in the first place?
Well, there was a misunderstanding. For reasons which are now historical, it seemed appropriate to separate. Well, I went to Chicago. Melanie went to St. Louis.
I left home because I argued with my father. Daddy didn't like Mars. Mars is a bastard, you know.
By temperament or...
Illegitimate, if you prefer. My father was against me having anything to do with him. Daddy was important in Kokomo. before he died.
He's dead, then. And what about Mother?
She died when I was 11. But people cared what we did, and my father cared that people cared. So I decided if I couldn't have Mars, well, I wouldn't have anything. So I left home. On the rebound, as they say, I married Edmund Key, which was a mistake. A mistake we are still paying for.
You see, he's got pathological ideas about marriage. It's not just that he would never give Melanie a divorce. We wouldn't mind that if he would just leave us alone.
He's a maniac, that's all.
He thinks that the marriage certificate entitles
it's
him to have...
It's children that he's after. He's a freak about wanting kids. He thinks because we went through a crummy ceremony that we have to live together and that I have to breed for him. That's what it's about. No matter how unhappy we were, no matter how much wiser I am now than when I married him, I was only 18.
You married Key in St. Louis?
Yeah.
And you stayed with him?
Nearly 2.5 years.
Uh-huh.
God, before I finally got away and went to Chicago.
Only Key hired a detective in St. Louis, and he tracked Melanie down in Chicago.
I was working at a department
store. Key quit his job in St. Louis. He sold his house, and he moved to Chicago just to make trouble for her. He came to where she was living. He threatened her with a gun. That was really a terrible, terrible scene. So, well, then we ran away. I mean, at first, just to think things out, but then we decided to come to Indianapolis. We worked out all the details. See, it was a matter of not leaving tracks, of setting up some kind of a cover.
So you pretend to be a homosexual couple.
Which gives us a good reason for living in an isolated place.
And other things, like Wilson's not my real name.
What is it?
Martin Willitson.
Because his name is Martin is why I call him Mars. And for other reasons.
We didn't think that anybody would be able to track us down.
Is your husband a wealthy man?
No, but he's got a high-powered job now.
What kind of work does he do?
He's a statistician. A computer statistician. Which gives you an idea of the kind of flexible personality he has.
He's the programming administrator of the Chicago Area Census and Ethnology Committee.
We thought we had things worked out.
And then this man Bartholomew showed up.
You have no idea what our life is like. Living day to day under a cloud which may rain destruction. It destroys part of you.
Well, it has.
You worry and frown, even when you're most relaxed and happy. It's always there.
And to have to run again... It would take too much out of us. I mean, if we can possibly avoid it. And that's why we decided, in the end, to try to see if you could do something.
I hope I can.
It's the critical time for us. But if you don't pan out, well, we can always run, I suppose.
And run, and run, and run.
Before I left, we talked about what we should do next. We had a great advantage to play with. Bartholomew didn't realize he'd already found his quarry. I paid him a visit. What, nobody home at number 17 and only 7 a.m.? I tried the door. It was open. Careless of whatever girl left last. But it cheered me up. Made me enthusiastic for my project. And look what I find. Somebody asleep with his mouth open. I wonder if it's because he's... thirsty. Are you thirsty, you nasty man? Wouldn't you like a little drink of water? Yes? You! Didn't you leave a 7 o'clock call, sir? Or did I confuse you with the lady in number 16?
You begin to provoke me, Samson.
It was his fault, really. He thought I was what he called local muscle on our first encounter, and he hadn't taken me seriously. Now, how would I like that if I was local muscle?
I hope I didn't disturb you unduly, Mr. Bartholomew, but you're a hard man to catch in and alone. What the hell is this supposed to be about?
Well, my client and I had a little chat yesterday, and he is still very upset to have you snooping around about some broad he knew in the dim and distant past. Now, I don't know how much experience you've had being gay in the suburbs, but he doesn't need you appearing on his front porch knocking at the door. He's willing to try to help you find this Melanie Bear.
Oh, yeah?
He might be able to give you the names of a couple of her relatives in Kokomo who might have heard from her. But you're to deal through me, and only me. You're to keep away from him. There it was. The big play. Trying to convince Bartholomew that Mars's reaction when asked about Melanie was just nerves, not knowledge, on the one hand. And on the other hand, offering him a carrot of help, relatives who knew where she was. If he took the carrot, we'd go off to Kokomo, hire some relatives, and give them Melanie's address in Timbuktu.
So,
Your client says Melanie Bear was just a broad he knew once upon a time, does he?
Yeah. Phooey. Phooey?
Did he neglect to mention that she also happened to be a broad that he happened to knock up?
He what?
Got her with child, impregnated her. Didn't mention that, huh?
No, he didn't.
And he didn't tell you, maybe, that he was due to marry the broad, only she skedaddled to St. Louis, where she lashed onto my client and married him instead. Well, if you think I'm going to buy that he doesn't know anything about Melanie Bear, forget it.
You don't want to know about her relatives in Kokomo?
No.
No.
He knows where she is.
You're sure of that, are you?
Yes, I'm sure.
Okay, I'll talk to him again.
But
part of what I said holds. You deal with me and only with me. Here's my card. If I'm not there, leave a message with the service.
Mm-hmm. This is your card, huh? It's nice.
Thank you.
Well, here's what I think of your card and your message and your service. Now, you don't tell me who to deal with, Samson. Here's a little advice for free. Don't ever wake me up again. You know, you're lucky I'm a gentle person, or I would have put you in a hospital for what you did this morning. Don't push your luck.
When I left Bartholomew, I was angry at Mars and Melanie, but partly at myself, for believing they'd played things straight with me, when in fact they deceived me, by omission. Little things like the fact that they'd had a baby, or at least a pregnancy, together. People should tell their private detectives the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It should be an 11th commandment. Well, it was time to spread the word. I went to Wilson's store, an antique emporium called the House of Antiquity.
Hi, my name is Maureen. Is there something I can do for you?
Yes, please. But failing that, is Mr. Wilson around?
I'm afraid he isn't.
Will he be in later?
Well, he called this morning and said he was going to spend the day buying. I do know that sometimes he combines a buying trip with a visit to his mother. She lives in Kokomo.
His mother? I didn't realize she was alive.
Oh, yes. I don't know very much about it, but I know her being in Kokomo is one of the reasons Mr. Wilson came to Indianapolis when he did.
Well, if I don't catch him there, will he be in tomorrow?
As far as I know.
Well, thanks a lot. You know, Maureen, you're a model of directness and clarity in an indirect and unclear world.
Am I? Gee, anytime.
Anytime is good enough for me, but I decided to go to Kokomo. I didn't have much else I could do. I'd already poured water up Bartholomew's nose once. Twice in the same day would have been sheer self-indulgence. Kokomo is a town of about 60,000, 50 miles north of Indianapolis. I stopped at the first phone booth I found inside the city limits. I scanned the columns for Willitson, my client's real name, and I was rewarded. There was only one.
Yes?
Mrs. Willitson?
Miss Willitson.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Albert Sampson. I'm working on a project for your son. He's not here by any chance, is he?
No, he's not. What project might you be referring to?
Well, it's a little complicated. May I come in and talk to you about it?
Sampson, you say?
Yes. I don't work at the store. I'm a private detective, and the project concerns some trouble about a girl Martin used to know in Kokomo. A Melanie Bear?
My son Martin never knew any girls when he lived with me.
Pardon?
And he most certainly did not know anyone called Melanie Bear. It's just not possible he should know that girl.
What?
Good day.
So there I was, standing out in the cold on the porch of a house in Kokomo, Indiana. It was nearly noon, and already I'd had a hard day. However, everything is good for something, even being in Kokomo. The first thing I did was to call my lawyer in Indianapolis, who gave me the name of a lawyer to ask a few questions of in Kokomo. I made an appointment for two. Then I looked up Melanie's father's will in the probate court records. His name was Freeman Bayer, and he left her $140,000, dying some 7 months after Melanie left home after her high school graduation. I tried to find a will for Melanie's mother, but the girl in charge of the files didn't have one.
You know, you're the second person in 2 weeks to ask me for these wills.
I am?
Yeah. Only the last guy was kind of taller and better looking than you. Said he was a private detective. What are you supposed to be?
Sometimes I wonder. I only had time to catch a cup of coffee before my appointment with the Kokomo lawyer, Robert Goger.
Well, Mr. Sampson, I'm always happy to talk to a friend of Clinton Grillo's.
I certainly appreciate your seeing me at such short notice.
Oh, no problem. I'm on half-time these days. One of the many nice parts of growing older in a successful practice.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick and choose how much work you want to do and who you want to talk to.
I know.
Your friends are friends, for instance.
Before I ask the main thing I'm interested in, I wondered if you could tell me how I learn who owns a house here in Kokomo and who owned it before its present owner. Is that difficult?
Give me the address. I'll have one of my people call you tomorrow. Unless you're in a great hurry.
I wasn't, and I gave him Miss Willetson's address. I'm mainly trying to get information on the family of a man who lived there until he died. A Freeman Bayer.
I knew Freeman Bayer very well.
Oh? Did you know his daughter?
Yes, Melanie. She would be about 27 now, wherever she is.
Are you interested where she is?
Yes, I am indeed.
Well, I'm not sure I should say anything. Her husband is trying to locate her, and she doesn't want to be located.
I shall not pass on anything you may say to me.
So, I know where Melanie is.
Is she well?
She seems well enough.
I'm glad of that. My interest is more than retrospective curiosity. I am the executor of Freeman Bear's will.
Yes, I looked it up in the probate records earlier this afternoon.
Ah. Well, when last I contacted her some years ago, she was living in St. Louis. She said that she didn't want anything to do with the money.
Well, that's a lot of bread to turn down, if I may say so.
It's even more now.
And she turned it down flat?
She wrote me one line. She said, "Give it to my father's bastards."
Did her father leave many?
Six.
Six?
Yeah. No, I don't think any of them knew that Freeman Baird was his father.
Well, if they didn't know, sir, may I ask how you know?
I read it in a book.
What?
I read it in a book. Would you believe it?
I don't think I would.
It's true, though. You know those sexual survey books, the Kinsey reports?
Yeah.
Well, Kinsey worked at Indiana University, and they kept up a sexual statistics research unit down there. And in the late 50s, they made this a study area. About 6 years later, the book came up. Oh, it was all Mr. X and Mr. Y, but Freeman gave them quite an earful, including six illegitimate offspring. Though as his lawyer, I must say he was careful to make provision for all of them.
It sounds as if he was proud of them.
I'm sure he was. At least partly because he only had the one child in wedlock. You know, Mr. Sampson, the fact that Freeman Baird didn't change his will during the 7 months between Melanie's departure and his suicide...
He committed suicide?
Yes.
Do you know why?
Well, family matters. I'd prefer not to be more specific.
Well, it's your prerogative.
The fact that Freeman didn't change his will after Melanie left means that whatever the reason she left, it wasn't something that alienated him from her.
No.
Will you be seeing her again?
More than likely.
Would you ask her if she'd be willing to hear from me about her father's money?
If I can ask her, I will.
Good. Thank you. This is one of the few outstanding problems I've got on my mind. It'd be a great relief to me to be able to pass that money on.
What's happened to it?
The money is in a form of a trust for her and is available to her whenever she should want it. It's now in excess of $250,000. Though, of course, there'll be a variety of duties chargeable out of that total.
Still, quite an amount. Enough to make even a day in Kokomo worth it. I drove back to Indianapolis after leaving Goger. On the way home, I stopped at the Indianapolis Library to put in a request for the mid-60s sex study book. Then I took the evening off. Well, even private detectives have private lives.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Albert Sampson.
Sampson, I must see you as soon as possible.
Why?
Can I come over now? I'm in town at my store.
Well, does it have to be now?
Absolutely, now.
Hey, look, give me half an hour to pull myself together, will you?
But he only gave me 10 minutes.
Look, I can't function till I've had my coffee. Join me.
No, thank you.
All right, well, what's the problem?
That man Bartholomew? Mm. He came out to the house again last night.
Did he?
Melanie was sleeping. If she'd answered the door, I can only imagine what would have happened.
Well, what did happen? Did he see her?
No, she slept right through it. Thank God.
So what did he want?
I don't know what to do.
Well, he wanted something. He said something.
Bartholomew says that Melanie had a child.
Didn't you know?
Did you?
Bartholomew told me the other day that she was pregnant when she married Key. I assumed you knew.
Well, I didn't know. And I didn't know that she'd killed it either.
Killed it?
Well, that's what Bartholomew said. Melanie had a child in St. Louis, and she killed it. She said her husband was trying to find her because she'd killed the child.
Well, what does Melanie say?
Well, like I said, she was asleep.
And you didn't tell her?
How? Melanie's everything to me. I have done more than you can ever know for her, to be with her, to have her. When she left me the first time, I just didn't know how to proceed. When I found her again in Chicago, it was like getting out of jail. See, we believed in each other, Mr. Sampson, sacrificed for each other, put ourselves in jeopardy for each other.
You're afraid it's true, then?
No! No, not that she killed her child, or any child, but it's possible that she had a child. My child, and didn't tell me.
But why shouldn't she tell you if she had a child?
It's possible.
Yeah. You think it's more than possible?
Well, I can hardly think that Bartholomew would be accusing her of killing a child if she never even had one.
Ah, you have a kind of understanding. Well, you would be breaking confidence just by asking about it, huh?
Well, yes. But I can't ask her. Well, I wondered if you might talk to Melanie, you know, without me there.
Uh-huh.
See, if you say that Bartholomew came to you, mm-hmm. told these things to you...
You want me to tackle Melanie on things you can't talk to her about yourself?
Well, I guess so, yes.
Okay, when do you want me to go?
This afternoon, I think. Now, I'll call her about 11 to say you want to see her, mm-hmm. and that'll give you time to think about it. You get there, say, about 2.
Life was fairly uneventful before I left the office for lunch. A few bills in the mail. Nothing else happened except a phone call. It came just as I was about to leave.
Mr. Sampson?
Speaking.
This is Mrs. Howell from Goger and Rule, attorneys at law in Kokomo.
Yes?
Mr. Goger asked me to call you to give you the results of a title search we've conducted on 710 Vale Street. A house?
Yes, that's right.
Mr. Goger wasn't specific. Is back to 1900 sufficient for you?
Indeed it is.
You ready?
And waiting.
In 1910, the property was sold by the owner, Elias Pugh, to one Matthew Walters.
Matthew Walters.
He sold the house in 1927 to a John Bean.
John Bean?
Mr. Bean lost the house to the Kokomo Trust Bank by repossession in 1932.
Oh.
And the bank auctioned the property, which was bought by a Sherman Cook. Mr. Cook sold the house in 1939 to one Freeman Bear.
Ah, Freeman Bear.
And he sold the house in 1940 to the present owner, Mildred Willits.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sufficient?
Very sufficient. Thank you very much.
I went straight to Melanie Bear. We talked in the pine-paneled living room.
Mars tells me that man Bartholomew has been making accusations against me.
Well, you seem to take it very matter-of-factly.
He works for my husband. My husband wants people to believe terrible things of me.
Well, Mrs. Key, have you ever had any children?
Yes. I had a son in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
He was Martin's, but he died before he was a year old. It was terrible.
Well, your husband told Bartholomew that you killed your child.
Did he?
You're not surprised?
That he would say that to some detective he hired?
Mm.
No, that is quite like Edmund. He is really quite mad about children. Insane mad. I kept telling him not to count so much on the child. That things can happen to kids.
Well, did you expect something to happen to the kid?
I wasn't surprised. Yes, I thought he wouldn't live. That's why I let him be called Edmund Jr. instead of Martin.
Oh. Well, I spent yesterday in Kokomo.
Did you?
Hmm. Among other things, I happened to make a few inquiries about Martin's mother. Where she got her house from? I found that she got it from your father.
Did she?
Now, you told me that Martin was illegitimate.
And you want to know if my father was Martin's father? Yes, he was. Martin and I are half brother and half sister. Are you shocked?
That's not my line. I just wondered if you knew.
We know, all right. That's why I ran away from Kokomo, from Martin, in the first place.
Well, how did you find out?
My father told me. The afternoon I graduated from high school.
Oh.
I'd been seeing Martin secretly. I was raised very strictly. Nobody knew about us. I said to Daddy, Daddy, I have a boyfriend and we want to get married. Just like that.
Good.
I was all set to tell him that I would still be able to go to college, though I wasn't so sure because I was just beginning to think I might be pregnant.
Mm.
But all Daddy said was, who? Who is it? I told him it was Martin. He jumped up and said, no, no. I said, I know what you're going to say, Daddy. You're going to say that you don't like him because he's illegitimate. Daddy just sat down again and said, all quiet. It's not because he's a bastard, Melanie. It's because he is my bastard.
I see.
I doubt it. But when you're young and sneaking out to meet an older man, to make love with him without anybody else in the world knowing, the last worry likely to cross your mind is that he's going to turn out to be your brother.
Half-brother.
Half-brother. I ran up to my room. Daddy went out. I packed and went to the bus station. I got a bus to Indianapolis. When I got there, I had to choose between buses going to New York and St. Louis. I decided to go to St. Louis because it didn't sound as sinful as New York.
And, Daddy?
I never saw him again. I never really had a chance. About the time he killed himself, I was going into labor.
Would you have any idea of why he killed himself?
Me, I presume. My inglorious fate.
Oh, he didn't disinherit you, you know.
I know.
I talked to Robert Goger yesterday, and he asked me to ask you to make arrangements about your dad's estate.
Oh?
Well, I told him I'd tell you it was still owing to you.
I haven't thought about it for years.
That's a lot of money.
Well, Martin does pretty well. We don't lack the creature comforts, except peace of mind.
No creature is comfortable without it. It was a constructive talk we had. I felt she liked me. Well, I certainly liked her. I wanted to help her. Before I left, I offered some ideas about what to do to untrack the bad guy, Bartholomew. I didn't talk to Mars again that day. I left him a night to talk to Melanie, to get things back on the surface with her. For two people fighting the world together, they seem to keep a lot of secrets.
We do sleep deeply, don't we? Well, let's just see how we like this, then.
Yeah.
You were so far gone there, sir, that I was afraid for a moment that I wasn't going to be able to revive you.
Stop that!
Oh, now is baby having trouble breathing? Well, let me
back. Baby's back, huh?
Water is a schoolboy's toy, Samson. If you really want to shock somebody who's asleep, you use ammonia. A little trick I learned while I was on the police force in Chicago. Phew. It really does stink in here. But I'm going through to your office. Oh, and Chummy, when you do emerge from your chamber, don't get any ideas. I'm a licensed carrier of a .38 special, and shooting people is so messy.
Eventually, I found out how to breathe again, but each breath hurt. So I tried to get along without, but that hurt too. I was thoroughly demoralized. Bartholomew was even sitting in my chair behind my desk when I finally made it to the office.
Okay, take a seat, Samson. Take a seat. Now, what can I do for you, huh? Divorce, industrial secrets. I'm expensive, but I'm good.
What the hell do you want here?
Hey, snappy patter, too. But I appreciate your directness. Well, what I want is some action. We don't seem to be getting anywhere since you came on the scene. And my client begins to think that I, Arthur Bartholomew, am giving him the runaround.
Arthur, I was coming to see you this morning.
Oh, well, now isn't that sweet? And I've saved you the trip, huh? You weren't going to act a tough guy again, were you?
No. But Wilson has finally told me about his connection with Melanie Bear.
Huh? So where is she?
I mean that he knew her when they were in Kokomo.
Oh, did he tell you it was the 20th century, too?
No, but he told me where to find Melanie Bear.
Ah. Where?
I can't tell you.
Oh, come on now. You tax my patience, Samson.
But I'm going to see her today to find out what she has to say about things.
Well, that's not exactly action, is it?
No, but it is a step in the right direction. Look, if she feels as protective of him as he does of her, she'll want to take the heat off him. Right? How you work it out between her and her husband is not Wilson's problem. But give us another day. As soon as you leave, I'll get myself together. We should know where we are by tomorrow.
And where will we be?
Well, that depends on things like what this jazz about Melanie Bayer having killed her kid is.
Look, all I know is what my client tells me.
I know the problem.
But he says while they were living in St. Louis, this Melanie keeps saying the kid is going to die. And then one day my client comes back and the kid is dead. Bruises all over him. Didn't sound nice.
Police?
Well, he says he didn't want to jail his wife. But he didn't know she was going to take off on him either. Look, all I know is that my job is to find her, and it seems to me that a man is entitled to know where his wife is.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he wants with her.
Knowing what Edmund Key wanted so badly to find Melanie for was what the whole problem turned on. Bartholomew left about 9. I let him get settled. Then I drove slowly out to Weir Cook, Indianapolis's airport. I parked in a long-term lot and then carried my toothbrush inside. At the Ozark Airlines desk, I found a man who looked like he'd become too heavy to fly. He managed to get me on a plane to Milwaukee, leaving in 38 minutes. I bought a round-trip ticket and a Chicago map. I didn't look for Bartholomew, but I knew he was around somewhere. The flight took a little over an hour and a quarter, and when we landed, I made straight for a public phone. I booked a hotel room. Between the phone and the cab stand, I asked two people for directions. I forced myself and was loud and obnoxious.
Hey, cabbie, I want to go to the Wabash Hotel.
Yes, sir.
And I'm in a hurry. I have a woman to see.
Have you? Gee.
Okay, sport. New destination.
What?
Look, I want to get lost for half an hour, then go back to the airport.
But... hey, you ain't some kind of movie star or something. I got it. Donny Osmond.
No.
Alice Cooper?
Back at the airport, I altered my Milwaukee-Indianapolis return ticket to include a stop in Chicago. And before 5 o'clock, I was in Chicago, sitting in a rented car outside a house on Franklin Boulevard. Before 5:30, a blue Dodge pulled into the driveway. I caught up with the driver at his front door.
Edmund Key?
Yes?
My name is Albert Sampson. I'd like to talk to you.
Would you?
Yes, about Melanie Bayer.
Ah, my wife. Come in. So, Mr. Sampson.
I'm a private detective working for a man who used to know your former wife.
She is my wife.
Legally, perhaps.
Morally.
Oh, we're not getting off to a very good start.
I understand that not all people see things as I do.
Well, we can agree on some facts. You are not living with the woman. You haven't lived with her for some time. You don't know where she is. And you've hired a private detective to find her.
And she has hired you to protect her, I suppose.
No. I've been hired by a man your detective is harassing.
Martin Willitson?
Yes. And I want to know what you want to find this woman for. There's no chance of her living with you again, yet you harass my client.
You don't deny Martin Willitson knows where my wife is?
No.
So that makes him an accomplice?
Look, if a woman wants to leave her husband, it's hardly a crime.
If she steals a child, it is.
What?
Melanie stole my child.
No, her child died.
One child she murdered. The first. It's her other child she's stolen, unless she's murdered him, too.
She's had two children?
Mr. Sampson, I am after my son. The child Melanie took with her when she left Chicago.
Oh, Bartholomew never mentioned a child that she had with her.
That is because I didn't tell him. His job is to find Melanie. Mine is to regain the child when Melanie is found. I've never even seen my son. All I have is these. Such records of his existence as I have been able to come across.
Well, the mail.
You may have copies of them.
Thank you.
Here, doctor's confirmation of pregnancy in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
She left me shortly after receiving that report. And prenatal records at a clinic on the south side here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And birth certificate. It appears she had the child at home. I don't know why she didn't have it in a hospital. If she was hard up for money, I would have paid. And these records of postnatal examinations, vaccination records, they cover the first 7 months of his life, then stop. I just hope, pray, that she took him with her when she left Chicago. That she didn't...
I'll have to have a talk with my client.
She called him after her father, Freeman. Freeman Key. He would be 6 now. I've checked the Chicago education records. No Freeman Key or Freeman Bear is in school this year. But at least no such child died in the last 5 years either. Though, if she murdered him, she'd hardly have let the body be found.
So it's really your child that you're after, not Melanie.
When I locate Melanie, I will offer to make a home for her, as well as the boy. But she is not an appreciative person. I can't say I expect her to come back, despite my being her husband.
It was very dark when I got back in my car and started the long drive to the airport. By then, my ardor for the whole truth and nothing but the truth had cooled, marginally. Enough to allow for some sleep. Enough to see a friend in the morning to start some cross-checking. It would be a while before I took anything Melanie told me at face value again.
Well, well. When I woke up this morning, the wife said to me I had a terrible dream. A dream that Albert Sampson was going to come to your office this morning. Oh, no, I said to her, not that. I better stay at home.
What's your biggest case, Lieutenant? Somebody pluck a feather off a fan dancer?
So what do you want, Albert?
Just a tiny favor.
Well, I'm happy to lend you a dime.
Oh, it's easier than that. A query concerning a cause of death. Any peculiar circumstances.
So why don't you do it yourself? Death certificates are public records. You find only...
Because it's in St. Louis. That's why.
Now, look, what are you...
I'm just checking out a nasty accusation about how somebody died. Just confirming that the death was natural. I'm sure it was. But I'm not as trusting as I was yesterday. I just want it checked.
And if the certificate says heart attack?
That would be a little surprising. The death I had in mind was a kid about a year old.
Nothing straightforward for you, is it?
No. Well, you think I'm indirect. You should see some of the people I work for.
Oh, Lord protect us from that. Well, okay. Give me this kid's name. I'll check it out for you. Call me about 1.
But at 1, the information hadn't come through. St. Louis wasn't feeling efficient. It would have been nice to know whether Melanie murdered her first child before asking her what she'd done with the second. But you can't have everything.
I'd like to have a little chat with you, if you don't mind, Mrs. Key.
I was about to go out.
I didn't realize you went out.
Only to places like supermarkets. I always dress like a man and try not to talk much.
Mm-hmm.
We've had no trouble.
I don't quite understand why you decided to live like this.
We're not like other people. Our relationship is not only taboo, it's illegal. And it's more honest to live like this. We are different.
I was in Chicago yesterday.
Were you? You want to talk to me about Edmund, don't you?
Well, when I saw him, he caught me off guard. He said he doesn't want you back.
He doesn't?
Mm-mm. He wants his son.
But his son is dead. I never hit him. I never wanted him to die. I don't know where the bruises came from. He died, and that was all there was to it. The doctor said it was blood disease. Would you like to know about blood disease? I've done a lot of reading since I came to this house. I know all about it. Its chances are greatly increased by inbreeding. All you have to do is study the Habsburgs.
That's not the son he's talking about.
What?
It's not Edmund Jr. He wants his son, Freeman Key.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, if you don't, nobody else does. Now look, your husband gave me copies of documents he's put together. Pregnancy tests. Birth certificate, clinic visits, vaccination... If you care to look at them...
No, I don't want to look at them. I need a drink. Oh, God. You're just like all of them.
Now, what do you mean?
You bring my husband's accusations to me into this house, and you try to twist my guts with them.
Oh, now, wait.
Well, Mr. Private Detective, you better believe that I'm not going to have it. I'm not...
Look, I'm not against you, Mrs. Key.
Oh, God! You're all alike, all of you! Will you take your damn papers and you give them back to my husband and you stuff his murdering lies down his throat?
Yeah, just a minute.
Go on! Down his throat, do you hear me? Down his throat!
Please, Mrs. Key!
She did everything but kick me out, except that she was the one who left and I was the one standing in the doorway of the house.
I ran out to my car and I followed her. It was a tortuous journey. She drifted rather than drove, first west, then a bit north. I thought she would decide to go to Chicago for a while. Then, about 10 o'clock, after nearly 5 hours on the road, she suddenly and decisively turned to Kokomo. I followed her to a motel, waited for her to check in, then I checked in, too. But I didn't get much sleep. I asked for a 6:30 call. I sat watching for my car until 8:30. Then it was time to make a phone call.
Mr. Goger's residence.
This is Albert Sampson. May I speak to Robert Goger, please? It's very urgent. She got him, but she was in no hurry.
Sampson?
Mr. Goger.
Is there some problem? Is it about Melanie Bear?
Yes, she's in town, and I believe she intends to see you about that money.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I don't want you to give it to her.
I'm not sure what you mean.
I don't want you to give the money to her.
Well,
at least not quickly. You see, last night she ran away from a man she loves because a subject came up she thinks will cause her a lot of problems.
And will it?
Only she knows.
What's the subject?
Her children.
She has children?
Two. One is dead.
But she never...
We don't know what's happened to the other one. You see, the father is trying to locate him and Melanie has run away. It's hard to see why she came to Kokomo unless it was to collect her money. And she probably wants it to disappear with. Or not. And perhaps to keep her from making a big mistake.
Where is she now?
In a motel nearby. Look, I've got to get back there so I don't lose her.
Well, it would be hard for me not to advance her enough cash to live in comfort while I realize the bulk of her estate.
Yeah.
If that's her intention. But I would certainly hope to keep her around town for a few days.
Ah, good.
Let's just hope that she does contact me.
When I hung up, it occurred to me that there might be another reason for Melanie coming to Kokomo. The second child. We didn't know where he was. He could be here. I left the phone booth and hurried back to my observation post. I'd only been away from it for 10 minutes, tops. It was too many. Melanie's car was gone. I panicked. I drove in an ever-increasing circle for more than half an hour trying to pick her up. But then I had to concede that I was unlikely to stumble over her at random. I was far more likely to pick her up again at Goger's, if she decided to go there. I found Goger's office and managed to get myself in a metered parking space around a nearby corner. It was still early. Goger wouldn't have got to town yet, so I had time to run some errands. The first was the bank. I bought a roll of dimes for the parking meter, but I used some of them for a phone call.
Miller.
Look, I'm in a bad mood, Lieutenant. My luck is out, and if you tell me you haven't got the information I asked you for, I'm going to commit an indiscretion.
About the kid who died?
Yeah.
Well, why so surly?
You have it?
Sure. Hang on.
I hung.
I wrote it down. I asked him to spell it, and I wrote it all down. Thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura.
What?
Purpura of the thrombotic thrombocytopenic variety.
Well, what the hell is that?
Cause of death of Edmund Key, Jr., lately of St. Louis.
Yeah, but what is it?
I don't know, friend. That you didn't ask me.
Thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura. Yes, not my day. I walked back to my car. Melanie's car was parked in the space in front of mine. It made life very difficult. I couldn't sit in my driver's seat and wait till she came back. She was bound to notice me and not like it. I ended up sitting on my back bumper and looking around the side of the car every 10 or 20 seconds for an hour. Not my day.
Hey!
Huh?
This your car?
What? Oh, yeah. What can I do for you, officer?
I think you know.
Do I?
The meter. You've expired.
What? I'll fix that. Got some dimes here.
I think I'd better see your driving license, mister.
Look, officer, here's my ID. I'm a private detective. I'm following the woman who belongs to the car there in front of mine.
Oh, yeah?
Hmm.
Hey, that's why you're sitting back here.
Yeah.
She recognizes you, huh?
Yeah, it makes it difficult.
Yeah, well, how about that? You know, I can take my retirement in about 7 years, and I've been thinking. Maybe I'll go into the detective business. What's it like, really? I mean, you meet a lot of women?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Well, I'll only be 55, see? And after 23 years on parking meters and traffic, I was thinking maybe I could do with a change. Mind you, I'll meet some Lulus myself sometimes. Oh, yeah.
Do you?
By the way, some lady just drove away in that car you was interested in. Did you notice that?
Oh, my God. Excuse me, officer. But even I wasn't butter-fingered enough to lose her twice in one morning. Melanie just drove back to her overnight motel, checked out, and moved to another. A gaudy, expensive place. But before I assumed anything, I called the lawyer.
Yes, she asked me very much what you anticipated. I think I can ethically say I did as much as you suggested.
So she's likely to be in town until, say, Monday?
Oh, I'm sure I'll be able to keep her in Kokomo, at least until then.
With that assurance, I got in my car and scooted back to Indianapolis, where I went to see my doctor about a medical problem.
Thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura.
Mm-hmm. What about it?
What is it?
Rare, progressive, fatal. Blood disease with severe internal bleeding. Check standard medical sources. If you can knock on my door and interrupt my lunch, you haven't got it.
I know of a little kid who died of it. Is it a kid's disease?
Not especially, no.
Well, what causes it?
Nobody knows.
Oh, what I mean is it hereditary?
Cause is unknown. Unknown. That means there's no known genetic association. Just because I say blood disease doesn't mean it's hemophilia.
Ah.
Anything else you want to know? Early senility and private detectives?
I stuck to the fatal disease and went to the library and its standard medical sources. Doc had done pretty well off the cuff with thrombotic with TTP, as we say in the trade. But he'd missed a few symptoms. Convulsions, coma, fever, anemia, numbness. Not very good reading, but good detective work. Though neither of his parents knew it, Edmund Key Jr. hadn't died by Melanie's hand or because of the consanguinity of his biological parents. He'd just been damned unlucky. Which still left us to find out the fate of Melanie's second child. While I was at the library, I asked about the sex study book I'd ordered. Not in yet. Then, I went to find my client.
Well, I don't understand how she could do it. Just leave, no note, no nothing.
Well, have you heard from her?
Nothing.
You know, you don't look so good. Are you sick?
Well, how am I supposed to look, huh? Melanie is gone.
Well, I know where she is.
What? Where? Why hasn't she contacted me?
She's in Kokomo. She's contacted her father's lawyer today, and she's making arrangements to get the money your father left her.
Money? What money?
Another of the details Melanie had neglected to mention to the love of her life. Well, it was only about $250,000. Not an important omission, like not telling him about a child.
So, after everything, she's planning to run away from me. But why should she do that?
Well, she was very upset when I mentioned the child which your husband is looking for.
Child?
Her second one. The one she had in Chicago. He'd be six now.
Melanie had a child in Chicago?
Yeah. Edmund Key gave me documentation. You mean you don't know?
Nothing.
Well, it's the child her husband wants. There's no future for any of you until we find out what's become of him.
But surely Melanie knows.
I asked her yesterday afternoon. She ran out of the house.
Well, that's too much for me. I just don't understand.
Look, I want you to think back over the time you met Melanie again. Now write down everything you can remember, where you lived, where you went with her, especially dates, facts, locations. I need a chronology, and you're the closest thing to a source of information I have at the moment.
Well, if you think it'll do any good.
I thought it would. Among other things, the good of giving a broken man something to think about, concentrate on. I left him to it and went home.
Hello, little friend.
What?
Remember me?
Oh, hell.
Arthur Bartholomew at your service. And you owe me a little service if it comes to that.
I do?
Yeah, for that little jaunt you took me on to Milwaukee.
Milwaukee?
You set me up, you shifty SOB, didn't you?
No.
Casually told me that you were going to see Melanie Bear so that I would follow you. Then you shake me at Milwaukee Airport. You're not as stupid as you look, are you?
I'm not smart enough to answer that.
Well, I didn't think it was very funny. Particularly when I called Edmund Key from Milwaukee and told him I'd followed you there. And he told me you'd just been to see him in Chicago.
Mm.
He wasn't very amused.
Yeah, I can see that.
She was here all the time, wasn't she, this Melanie Bear?
What can I say?
Well, I have some good news for you. Key has called me off. He told me to come back to Chicago.
What? He's quitting?
I doubt it. I think he's up to something.
Well, he didn't sound like he'd quit when I talked to him.
Well, maybe you scared him, Albert. Frightened him half to death.
Yeah. Well, I don't like it.
You're never satisfied, are you? You want the pressure off Wilson? Now it's off. It's called a gift horse.
Did Key ever mention a kid Melanie had in Chicago?
You mean the one she killed in St. Louis?
No.
Another one?
That much Bartholomew and I had in common. Clients who kept secrets from their detectives.
Excuse the mess.
Did you sleep last night?
No. No, I was up. Doing your list. Thinking.
Mm.
I just can't believe it, Samson. She's going to leave me.
She's been upset. She'll probably think again.
All the things she never told me.
You can work that out as you grow old together.
Oh, here's the list you asked for.
Uh-huh. Let's see. In Chicago, you just came across her while you were shopping in the department store?
That's right.
But you didn't live together?
No. No, our coming together was slow. Delicate. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. But you saw her, and what? Went home with her?
No, I never took her all the way home. She said she had a very strict landlady.
Are you sure she didn't want you to see something there, like her child?
I'm not sure of anything.
Okay. Then a detective found Melanie at the same department
store. Yeah, her husband's a goon from St. Louis. It was that that made everything happen.
What?
You know, Key himself came to Chicago. He appeared one morning at Melanie's boarding house with a gun. I don't know what he thought he wanted, but she got away from him. Came to me. We walked around all day and all night. That's when she told me that we had the same father.
You didn't know before?
No.
Well, what did you do?
We talked. Decided that it didn't matter as much as getting her away from her husband did. We worked everything out, where we would come, here to Indianapolis, what we would have to do to hide her, everything.
Hmm. Did Melanie have to call anybody, make any special arrangements that might seem now like she was caring for a child?
No, not that I remember. I don't remember. I don't remember.
Wilson faded before my eyes, and he fell asleep on the living room couch. I used the opportunity to look carefully around the house. Melanie had lived there for 5 years, but for all the personal traces there were of her, you'd have thought she'd just moved in. She was not the type to commit herself, it seemed, which made her address book that much more important to me when I found it. I left Mars asleep and went home. Everything in the book was complete and careful and irrelevant, until I got to the back cover, where I found an address, just an address, no name or city with it. But this alone looked like something from the past that Melanie wanted to remember. And when I got out my Chicago map and found a street by the same name in the area where Mars used to leave Melanie at, I realized I had something worth going to Chicago for. I got my travel things together. There were a lot of things I could do in Chicago. If I ever managed to get there. Albert Sampson.
Oh, you're in.
Lieutenant Miller.
Yeah. I had something slide across my desk here. It occurred to me you might be interested.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. Request for help from Chicago police. And this in person. They suspect something's happened to him.
Yeah?
Caught my eye because the last name is the same as the kid you asked me about in St. Louis.
Key.
That's right. Chicago's looking for a missing 6-year-old, Freeman Key.
Uh-huh.
Father's gone to court or something. And they think the mother's here in Indianapolis. Melanie Key.
Yeah.
Now, do you know where the woman is?
Not exactly, no.
But you know her?
Yeah.
Well, where'd she live?
No, I won't help you. She ran away from home 2 days ago. Nobody there knows where she is now. But I can make a suggestion about that kid.
Oh?
Yeah, tell Chicago something like, a source here says child was put up for adoption in Chicago 5 or 6 years ago. Please check.
Oh, they'll love that.
It's my best guess at what happened, and you're the first to know.
It was about noon when I got to Weir Cook Airport. It was a short flight, but I had time to plot all the addresses I knew on my Chicago map. Melanie's mystery address, Key's house, the clinic that Melanie took newborn Freeman Key to for vaccinations, the address of the midwife as it appeared on the birth certificate, other locations supplied from Mars's list. I got off the plane reasonably happy, rented a car, and booked a hotel room. It was then I made my mistake. I bought a newspaper. Local child sought, it said in banner headlines. Fear of violent end. And there was a picture of Melanie Key, knee bare. Under Melanie's picture, a detective inspector Dowdle was quoted. I fear for the child. We have reason to believe that his mother is not a very responsible person. I was stunned, and then angry. I put my list of visits away and went looking for Dowdle.
I was just wondering whether you had any time to work on the case, what with giving out sob stories about this dangerous mother.
Look, what's your beef, sonny?
Well, I came in to find out how seriously you take this stuff.
Murdered kid? We take it pretty seriously.
That kid's no more murdered than I am.
You know where he is?
No, not yet. But the way you're off chasing shadows, I expect I'll find him a lot sooner than you will.
I get the impression, sonny, that you came here less to ask questions than to tell me answers. Are we through with your message yet?
All right. Now, let me tell you a fact and give you a piece of advice. Now, you carry on about Melanie Key being dangerous because her husband told you she killed her first kid, right? Well, you check the death certificate in St. Louis and then get somebody to tell you what it means. And you won't have your reason to run around telling people that Melanie Key's dangerous. That's the fact. And it leads to the advice. Now, it seems likely to me that the kid was put in care of someone else permanently, either a legal adoption or an informal one. Now, get people after that angle. That's how you'll track down this kid. If I don't find him for you first.
You have a friend in the Indianapolis force, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
The one who told us a source had suggested we go through adoption records.
Yeah, I know one or two people there, yeah.
Well, don't think I won't take what you say into account, sonny. But before we broke this to the public, we went through official adoption records all over the area, and we came up with a blank.
Oh.
Now, we haven't asked the public to look at the little kids who live next door and ask their mothers to produce their birth certificate. No. But we've circulated all our doctors, and we've turned up nothing. We wouldn't have broken this story the way we did if we weren't pretty sure of our ground. This kid doesn't even seem to have had a cold in 6 years. And I can only think of one reason for that.
Well, Dowdle didn't really discourage me, but his attitude reminded me that Melanie was a strange woman, capable of concealing important facts, lying to the love of her life. Capable of what else? I was becoming afraid to ask, but I had to. From the police station, I went to the clinic where Melanie had last taken her child.
Excuse me, miss.
Yeah?
Is there someone who can tell me a bit about this clinic? Perhaps help me with some information about one of your former patients?
Oh, you another reporter?
Yeah.
Looking for that missing child?
Uh-huh.
I'm Rose. That's R-O-S-E, Troll, T-R-U-L-L. Happy to tell you anything you want to know.
Well, that's very kind of you, Rose. I wondered whether the clinic specializes in pre- and postnatal treatment.
Not really, no. We provide general medical services.
Uh-huh.
We have a good emergency service, though. If we had a specialty, that would be it.
You keep your records on a computer?
Oh, yeah, we're very modern. Mind you, we had bags of trouble with that computer at first.
No.
Yeah. Came up with some really weird stuff the first few years. Huh? Showing that a 78-year-old lady was pregnant with twins.
Oh, no.
Record-wise, it was a real screw-up, pardon my French.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it doesn't make mistakes now.
Oh, no, no. About three and a half years ago, some city bigwig came out here, and he spent 2 weeks with all the wires out and stuff.
Were you here when he did this work?
Oh, yeah. I've been here for years. It's convenient, see. I live around the corner, and my mother says there's always a chance I'll meet a single doctor, and, you know.
Yeah. You don't remember the name of the big city wig, do you?
No, but he was a tall guy, kind of ordinary looking. Except for these steely gray eyes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and he really sweated over his work.
Sweated?
Yeah, he used to rise up from behind the machine just dripping with sweat. His body must have been really weird, sweat-wise.
Yeah, well, thanks. One other thing. Can you tell me where I'll find a Dr. Briggs?
You mean our Dr. Briggs?
Yeah.
6 feet under. He died 4.5 years ago. Gee, why would you be asking about him?
Because his name was on the clinic printout as Melanie's doctor before the birth and little Freeman's after it. My next stop on the long journey through Melanie's life in Chicago was at the midwife's apartment. Only the woman living at the address given on the birth certificate told me that the midwife, too, had died.
Was she old when it happened?
Yeah, about 100, it seemed like. Me and Vic waited 11 years downstairs till she died and we could move up here. It's the biggest apartment in the building, see?
Yeah.
And she hung on to it alone. We thought she was never going to pop off.
When did she die, do you remember?
July 18th, 3 years ago. No, she died on the 17th. We moved up here on the 18th. But she was awful old, you know, at the end. I'm surprised she was still doing midwifing. But I never knew her that well, you know.
No 5 or 6 year old trail is a hot one. But I got the feeling that somebody should have survived the experience of dealing with Melanie and her son's birth. I hoped the son had. But I was down to one final address.
Peace, ma'am.
Oh, crazy. Sorry to trouble you, ma'am, but I'm trying to zero in on a chick called Melanie Key or Melanie Bear. And I found his address in some record she kept, you know? I think she lived here 5, 6 years ago. Do you know anything about her?
Yeah, Melanie. Yeah, I knew her.
Ah, she lived here, did she, 5, 6 years ago?
Yeah, it was about then, yeah. Just let me work it out.
Okay.
We got together about summertime. She hung around till next spring.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 5 years ago. Yeah. Ooh, bad scene. Her husband rolled in one morning. Oh, very hairy.
Look, I'm a private detective working for her brother. We're trying to get her free of her husband once and for all, you dig?
He's still making waves, is he?
Yeah.
Bad type.
Mm.
Came in waving one of those little automatics around, you know?
No.
One of those five and dime jobs. They're as likely to blow up as do any trouble to what you're shooting at.
Oh, I don't know anything about guns, man.
Yeah, stay away from those cheap automatics.
Yeah.
Anyway, comes in here and makes a lot of noise. He scares the hell out of us.
Oh, there were a lot of you, huh?
Oh, yeah. This is a big house. People kind of, like find their way here.
Yeah.
Anyway, we disrailed this character, but Melanie packed up and went away. Never saw her again.
And you'd known her a little less than a year.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. She came to town, been living pretty rough, and she kind of found us here. Troubled girl, you know.
Yeah,
up with one thing and another.
Do you mean she was pregnant?
Yeah, she was that, too.
Mm-hmm. Do I dig from the kind of guy you seem to be that you helped her with the kid, huh?
People. My weakness.
Yeah, I know. You got her some people to take the baby. Am I right? Without the official red tape adoption procedure. Now, I'm going to have to ask you to help me find the people who've been taking care of the kid, because otherwise, man, Melanie's going to be in a lot of trouble.
I can't give you the names of the people who have the kid.
Well, you have to. You must.
Because nobody's got it.
What?
But she never had it.
What do you mean?
She had it aborted. I helped her, but what I did was, I helped her find someone to do the abortion.
Are you sure?
Oh, I should be. I took her to the guy, I waited for her, and brought her back home after it.
You're telling me that she never had a child while she was here in Chicago?
Not while she stayed here, she didn't.
And when her husband came here, did she tell him she hadn't had a child?
Loud and clear. She said it had miscarried, but there was no question of it having been born.
I had one more interview to do to clear away my confusions, but it meant going to Kokomo. Because in Kokomo, there was Melanie Key, Nee Bayer, the lady with the final answers to the questions she'd raised herself. From Chicago, I flew to Indianapolis. From the airport, I phoned Robert Goger.
We've been waiting to hear from you, Mr. Sampson.
And you will, believe me. I'm driving up to Kokomo now.
Tonight?
Well, it'll take me about an hour and a half. I've got to stop first, so I'll get in about 9:30. I want Melanie Key to be there.
Well, Mrs. Key is here now. She had dinner here.
Good. That will give you a chance to ask her a few questions.
Questions?
Yeah, about her abortion in Chicago, for instance.
Abortion? She mentioned a miscarriage in Chicago.
Well, you tell her I've met the flower child who helped her.
The flower child?
Yes, and whatever you do, don't let her get out of that house. She may not want to talk to me because she's going to have to tell the truth for a change. But if she leaves, she'll be in for the tender mercies of the police because they're looking for her in two states. Now, you tell her that. Two things happened on my drive to Kokomo. First, I stopped to pick up my book, Sexual Patterns in a Midwestern Town, the library. Then a little later, it started to snow. A heavy, wet, slushy snow.
You're very prompt, Mr. Sampson. I'd have thought the weather would have slowed you down.
It's getting really bad out there. It's coming down harder, and it seems to be getting colder.
Melanie is not very well. I'm afraid she's upset, to tell you the truth.
Well, you better go get her. Upset is the least that she's due.
Hello, Mr. Sampson. Robert, could I please have another drink?
Well, Melanie...
Now, don't give it to her. We're not hiding behind things tonight. My entire dealings with you, Mrs. Key, has been a joust with half-truths and downright lies. You may be able to live with it, but I can't. And more than that, your husband has got the police out after you because he's convinced them that at best you're hiding his child and at worst you murdered him.
But I never had another child.
Now, you know that, I know that, but it's gone a long way past anyone believing it very quickly. We had a long talk. Though I guided it as well as I could, we didn't get our plans settled until after midnight. Melanie cried through the first part of our talk. She can't bear people knowing the whole truth about her. She has to keep things back, as if it helps her retain control of her own destiny. But when we got on to plans, she began to help, especially with what it would take to get her husband to move.
Talk to him as if your sense of morality is better than his. He just can't stand people acting as if he's in the wrong.
Other things were easier. Lieutenant Miller agreed to come up in the morning. We wanted a police witness. And Goger's housekeeper, Mrs. Seal, had a grandson who was 8, but small for his age. He would do. So it was pretty late when I called Chicago.
Who the hell is this? Do you know what time it is? Nearly 1 a.m.
This is Albert Sampson, Mr. Key.
Who?
Albert Sampson. I have some information for you that couldn't wait. Yes, I've located your son, Mr. Key. I found your boy. He's alive and well. I thought you'd want to know it at the earliest possible moment.
I find it hard to believe that you have the right boy. After all this time, I mean.
Oh, he's the right boy, all right. I'm in Kokomo. Your wife left him with one of her relatives here more than 5 years ago. But there is something a little strange. Mrs. Seal, his foster mother, has his birth certificate. And he was born 3 weeks and 2 days before the date given on the document you gave me.
Then it couldn't possibly be my child.
But he is. Frankly, Mr. Key, I'm a little surprised at your attitude.
Huh?
I thought you'd be delighted. When I located him, I called you first. I haven't even called my client yet, or the police. I considered it my moral responsibility to let you know, because you've been through so much trouble to find him. Mrs. Seal says she'll give him up to you, but if you don't want him...
I want him, Sampson.
I was sure you would.
You and this Mrs. Seal are the only ones who know about him?
Yes.
And the only ones who've seen the birth certificate?
Yes, so far.
I'll drive down there in the morning and have a look.
Uh-huh.
Don't tell anybody else until I've seen the boy.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
And you will wait and not tell anybody?
Yes, I'll wait until I see you in the morning.
I gave him the address and hung up.
He's coming, then?
Yes.
I won't have to see him, will I?
Well, you may, but he can't possibly harm you. We'll both be here, and Lieutenant Miller, and he has a gun.
Edmund has a gun, too. That is, he did, several years ago.
I know.
It's snowing very hard, Samson.
Well, if it slows him down, it'll just give us more time to get ready. Mrs. Seal, what time will you be able to get your grandson?
After breakfast, or before, if necessary.
Well, how long will it take Key to drive here from Chicago?
Well, it's 3 hours at the least, on a good run. But with this snow, well, it could be anything.
Mm. How deep is it?
5 or 6 inches already. No sign of stopping.
Well, that's all right. Well, we have a busy day tomorrow. I think we'd better get some sleep now.
I had the uncomfortable couch in the living room. But I was tired, and it was dark and quiet. But I couldn't get what would be happening tomorrow out of my head. Key would arrive. A child would be produced. He would say, "That isn't my child." We would say, "How can you be so sure? Is it because you don't have a child? Because you invented the kid that the Chicago police are looking for? You did it all with your own little computer?" I decided to read myself to sleep. I got out the sex study book and had a look through it. Not every detective's idea of titillation. Most of us prefer something a little more direct. But I wasn't bored. Oh, no. I spent a good deal of time reading about Melanie's father and Mars's father. He'd certainly sowed a wild oat or two, or six. But life hadn't been all that smooth for him. For instance, he'd got mumps on his honeymoon. That, at least, was no fun. I fell asleep.
Hey, stop right there.
What? Oh, now look, you nearly made me drop my tray.
What? Oh, God. Mrs. Steele, I thought for a minute that you were Edmund Key, that you'd got into the house.
Now, how would he do that with the house locked up tight?
I know, but for a minute I thought maybe he hadn't waited till the morning at all, that he'd left after I talked to him last night.
Well, even if he did, I don't think he'd be here yet. There must be 2 feet of snow, I should think. It's beautiful. The sun is shining, and it's a wonderful sight.
Well, maybe I'll go out and have a look. Who else is up?
Mr. Goger. He always wakes early. I made his breakfast, but I thought I'd stop and see if you were awake and wanted something, too.
And I nearly frightened you to death. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, I think I'll go outside for a walk. Huh. I'm not really an outdoor type, but the chance of seeing a living Christmas car doesn't happen every day, does it?
Yeah, what was that?
Forget it.
I put on my coat and went out on Goger's front porch. The snow was fresh, white, dazzling, and deep. There was no wind. The sun was bright. The air was cold.
Oh, this is lovely.
Hey, what?
I've got you now, Samson. If you make a sound, so help me, I'll blow your foul head off.
All right, whatever you say.
Back against the house. Keep out of sight of the windows. And don't think this gun isn't loaded.
That was the last thing I thought as I stared down the eternity end of a small, dirty automatic pistol. He pinned me against the wall with his left forearm across my throat while he rested the gun on top of it, looking straight up at me.
You are a bad man, Samson. Why do you call me in the middle of the night to tell me you have my boy here? You don't have him.
Mr. Samson, can you hear me?
Don't hurt her.
Get rid of her.
Yes, Mrs. Seal, I can hear you.
I want to know what time you expect that horrible man. I want to tell my daughter when I need my grandson, you see. Will I have time to get breakfast for everybody, or should I go pick him up now?
Oh, you'll have plenty of time, Mrs. Seal. I'm sure there's plenty of time.
All right.
I should kill you, Samson.
Don't do anything foolish.
If I needed to kill people, believe me, I'd kill you. Her grandson is the boy you were going to tell me was my child. What do you take me for? Is my wife here? I don't understand any of you people. You were going to kill me, I suppose, to shut me up. You'll go to any lengths to keep her from getting what she deserves. You're scum, Samson. And Melanie is scum. And if I needed to kill people, I'd kill you both.
Instead of killing me, he knocked me down and kicked me in the stomach. Then he started running away. I couldn't believe it.
He'd driven all night through a blizzard just to wave his gun in my face and mess up all my plans and run away.
Well, damn it, you're not going to get away. Damn it! Just go and spin lies to cause people trouble. Not even for people who tell lies enough of their own.
He did. It took me a couple of seconds to climb over the huge piles of snow left by the snowplows, but when I did get onto the roadway, I saw Key getting into his car, and he saw me.
Stop. I have some things to say to you.
But he didn't stop. He was getting away after all the work I'd put in, driving directly toward me 10 miles an hour on the icy road, but getting away. So I walked toward him, like a showdown between the good guy and the bad guy. Only this time, the bad guy had everything on his side. He had the gun. He was in the car. The only thing I had going for me was surprise. His surprise that I had anything in mind at all, except letting him crush me. When the car got close, I stepped on the bumper and jumped up on the hood, then stood sideways until I covered all his windshield. A car ain't much good if you can't see to drive it.
Get off! Get off my car! It's my car! You have no right! No right!
He lost control and drove into a snow pile. It was the end of my ride. I was thrown off into the middle of the road. It stunned me for a moment, until I saw a shadow emerging from Key's car. A shadow with a bare hand that held a familiar shape. I was sure he was going to shoot me.
I know what you want, Samson. I know what you want. I know what you want me to do. You want me to kill you. That's what you want me to do.
You keep away from me,
Key.
You
would like nothing better than for me to lose my self-control and kill you.
No, no, I wouldn't.
You want me to kill you, but I'm not going to do it. You can torture me, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to lose control for one moment and ruin my whole life. But when I get finished with Melanie, I swear I'm going to ruin your life, too. I'll make it a misery for you, just like I will for her. I don't have to use this gun. I don't need to use it.
Well, you do what you want, Edmund Key. But I have some things to say to you, and I didn't get the chance while you were shoving me around back at the house. You threaten me? You're not ruining anybody's life. Not mine, not Melanie's. Because I know, Key. I know what you did and how you did it. You created that kid on a computer. You have no son. There was no kid to kill.
She did kill him.
Ah, you're in for it, sweetheart. What do you think they'll do to you when they find out?
She killed my child. My child. I didn't want her, just the child. She deserves everything she's going to get.
Well, I'm going back to the house now.
Samson! Who else knows what you know?
It's all in my notebook. And the police are on their way here from Indianapolis right now. But, you go ahead and shoot. You're the big man with the gun. You're finished no matter what you do.
I can't shoot you. I didn't trust my self-control. See?
He showed me the butt of his gun. There was a hole where the clip went.
I was going to shoot you. All the way down here, I intended to. I loaded the gun and I cocked it. But while I waited for you outside the house, I realized that you were trying to trap me. So I took the clip out. See? So I wouldn't be able to kill you even if I really felt like it.
He showed me. The loaded clip in one hand, his gun in the other. He put the gun up to his jawbone.
See? It's completely harmless.
And he pulled the trigger.
What's happened? Are you all right? How long have you been here?
I don't really know.
My God, who was it?
Edmund Key.
I didn't realize you had a gun.
I don't. They're dangerous.
What happened?
He shot himself.
But why?
By accident. He didn't think there was a bullet in the chamber.
And from what people told me afterwards, there shouldn't have been. Lieutenant Miller told me about it when he arrived. You're not supposed to be able to fire them with the clip out or something. He says that anyone who knows enough about guns to modify them like that would have known there was a shell left. He thinks Key killed himself on purpose. But I don't. I'm sure he didn't. But I was only the man who was there, watching, as he blew his head to tiny pieces. Melanie went back to Mars, and a few days after they were together again, I went out to visit them.
It was Mr. Sampson, Mars. I thought it would be.
Well, who else would it be out here? Hello, Sampson. God, you look rough.
Oh, thanks. I've had what they call shock. I'm feeling better now, though.
You don't look it.
I hope you brought your bill. We certainly appreciate the work you did for us.
Yes, well, we all have to live, and as much as I hate to admit it, that even includes me.
Well, you give the bill to her, Sampson. She's the one with the money now.
Yes, let me have it.
Well, I didn't come out here just for that.
Come to wish us a Merry Christmas, have you?
Mars is still upset because I kept things from him.
Well, just little things like babies and money.
I'm sure we'll work it out.
Yes. Well, I've got a present of sorts for you. Some news, I think, anyway.
Oh, yeah?
It's about your father.
My father?
Our father.
Your father, Mars. But I don't think he was Melanie's father.
What?
Not your biological father, I mean. Freeman Bayer had mumps on his honeymoon. And though it's not a serious disease in children, it can sterilize men. When you think about it, Freeman had a lot of children before he got married.
You don't have to tell me that.
But only one after he got married. Well, it occurred to me that we might just be assuming too much not to question whether Freeman himself actually fathered Melanie.
But who? How?
After I talked to the doctor about mumps and to Robert Goger, he was Freeman's friend and his executor. And when he went through Freeman's papers, he found letters to your mother, Melanie, which would suggest it's pretty certain your father was someone else. Goger thinks your father had only just found them when he killed himself.
My God.
Live and learn.
I hadn't expected them to run across the room to embrace each other like they do in those TV commercials, but I had expected it to be pleasant news. No more need to hide from anything at all. They weren't related. Melanie was single again. They could get married if they wanted. They could have kids. But instead, we just sat quiet for a while until I felt out of place and left. A month later, I received an announcement that they had married. I thought about sending a present, but they hadn't paid my bill yet, and I couldn't afford to do more than think about it. By the first day of spring, I was getting nervous about my money. But the next day, I got a letter from Melanie, along with not one check, but two.
Dear Mr. Sampson, I'm very sorry to have taken so long paying you. It's only now that I realize how much you've done for me and how much I owe to you. In consideration of that, I've taken the liberty of sending a little present along with the amount I owe. Being a detective, you have already noticed I'm in Louisville. No, Mars and I have not moved. To come to it quick, I have left Mars. Please, please do not tell him about this letter, what city I've gone to. He'll just follow me like Edmund did and make a scene. I just cannot seem to be what a man wants me to be. Are all men the same? I hope not. But Mars was never the same after all the trouble. I think he made me marry him because he thought he had to. But I didn't mind. And now here I am with a husband that I'm not living with, just like it was. I can't think of anything else to say. I hope you have a good life. I hope I do, too. Melanie Bear.
I looked at the checks. The gift was $2,000, a generous token in any currency. But the letter made me sad. Mars and Melanie had stayed together against the odds because they were fighting a common enemy. Now the enemy was gone, and so was the thing that kept them together. How could things possibly have stayed the same for them? Now the enemies were within.
In The Enemies Within, by Michael Z. Lewin, from his novel of the same name, Albert Sampson was played by Ed Bishop, Martin Wilson by Blaine Fairman, Melanie Bear by Lisa Ross, Robert Goger, Peter Dynley, Arthur Bartholomew, Paul Maxwell, and Edmund Key, Peter Marinka, Lieutenant Miller, Peter Whitman, Jack the Flower Child, Roger Gartland, Inspector Dowdle, Ramsey Williams, Rose Trull, Patricia Gallimore, Maureen, Denise Cartier, The Traffic Cop, Terry Malloy, and Mrs. Seal, Joyce Latham. The play was produced and directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine.